Blue sparks crackled. An etheric strike as surely as a physical one. I rode the door all the way down, landing on top of it in a crouch.
Up or down?
The decision had already been made, because something was moving. I leapt up and to the side, catching a banister and propelling myself over, one boot toe pushing and my left arm doing most of the work. This swung me neatly around, and I hit the ground in the living room, rolling. I hit furniture. Felt like the edge of a couch, and something that ground under my coat, sharp edges slicing. One whole wall of Zamba's living room was, if I recalled correctly, a multi-tiered altar to Ifa, and several lesser Orisa, built around a rock-walled fireplace. Drums should have been stacked against one wall, and the rest of the room should have been lined with furniture. Two couches against the window, a long line of cushions for the lower-ranked devotees, and Zamba's throne-like recliner with its back to the altar. Wheeled in by a couple of strong young men at the beginning of every court-holding session, I remembered Zamba had a close personal relationship with the twins. They had a whole quadrant on her main altar and a private altar in her bedroom. My blue eye could get only confused images through a heavy, oppressive screen of etheric bruising. It was thick in here, in more ways than one. The stench I was beginning to find all too familiar began to paint the back of my throat as I waited, full length on the floor. Shit. The darkness came alive with tiny red dots. I was suddenly very sure that whether or not Zamba was involved, I'd find nothing living in this happy little split level. The roaches swarmed my feet. I spun towards a shadow barreling through the darkness. My fist crunched through slippery flesh. I hooked my fingers into something, pulling as hard as I could. The creature's gelatinous eyeball popped, splattering my arms with goo. Hands fumbled at my waist, and I kicked back. The creature flew back, hitting Zamba's altar. Two more zombies crowded me. Either they have orders to kill whoever enters this house, or Zamba has fallen prey to something, or... My aura flamed, sea urchin spikes boiling with blue sparks. That was better and worse. Better because the shifting illumination gave me visuals to work on, instead of straining my other senses to place the opposition. Which meant I could afford to unlimber the whip. More roaches clambered around me. These are new juicy zombies. The laugh bounced off the walls as the air thickened to paste, darkness pressing down as if I were the thing to be exorcised from this house. One of the zombies leapt on me, and I struggled to free myself.
What the fuck? Okay, the zombie on my back just exploded away. Someone's firing a 22!
Teeth crunched against my elbow, worrying at the tough leather. I struck out with my elbow. Something hit me behind the knees and came down on top of me. The weight on my back disappeared. I knew that snarl.
That's soft!
Seeing a ware fight is like seeing a tree bend itself to the wind, leaves fluttering. Every motion is thoughtlessly deliberate, beautifully precise.
Take that, pendejo! Oh, shit!
A zombie fell onto the shooter. The zombie's skull caved in under my knife hand strike, sending it toppling off the civilian's supine form.
Oh.
The priorities of the situation shifted with the introduction of an innocent civilian. I reached down with my hellbreed strong right hand, grabbing a handful of flannel shirt, and turned the figure towards the door.
What? What the hell was that? No, I'll figure that out later.
The roaches were popping out of existence. I hoped like hell there weren't more zombies. Whoever I'd dumped on the porch would be a prime target. I picked up my whip from where it had been knocked from my hand, trying to collect myself and wrap my head around the scene before my eyes. Now that the air was no longer paced thick, ambient light was creeping around. It was no longer darker than midnight in a mineshaft. Still, it didn't take a lot of light to see that forensics was going to have a hell of a time with this place.
Hey, sweetheart.
Wouldn't you know it? Even spattered with zombie goo, Saul looked too good to be real.
Hey, yourself. Who's the civilian?
A kid. Gilberto. Says he heard you were coming out Chesco way on the police scanner. Figured you were headed for this place.
Oh, for Christ's sake.
I had to admit. The kid showed promise and intuition. Neither of which were going to help him once I got my hands on him.
Seems like an okay kid. You okay?
Just ducky.
I glanced out onto the front porch. Gilberto crouched, his eyes huge in his thin, sallow face. His hair was mussed, free of a hairnet for the first time and falling lank across his pimpled forehead. He held the .22 like it was his personal holy grail.
Happy now, Gilberto?
I didn't have time to say much else. There was half a house that could be crawling with more zombies.
Oh, watch him, Saul.
I drew my .45 and headed for the basement. The basement smelled bad, but not overwhelmingly so. This used to be where Zomba kept a couple pit bulls all year, and a few goats inside during the autumn rains. The chickens had their own coop in the backyard, but as soon as my eyes adjusted, I saw ragged bundles of feathers scattered over the concrete floor. I hit the light switch. There was nothing living down here. The dogs were shapeless lumps of fur. The feathers were chicken corpses, strewn around as if there'd been some sort of explosion. In the middle of the basement, a chalk and cornmeal circle writhed. The lines were moving sluggishly as the sorcery in the air bled out. The meal was scattering, bleeding away from the thin lines. Inside the circle, the three goats were twisted together, their legs stiff with rigor mortis, and their bellies bloated. The floor was awash with sticky, almost dried blood.
This isn't real voodoo. Nobody even made an attempt to cook these, or to kill them kindly.
The animals had been killed with sorcery. They lay twisted in agony, their throats ripped open.
No self-respecting practitioner would do this. Not even a Bokor would waste lives this flagrantly.
I examined every part of the scene I could see. Gun in one hand, my other on the whip. There were no teensy tiny track marks in the blood here. My blue eye caught the fading marks of etheric violence, souls ripped from bodies. The explosion of energy when something is killed is one form of food for the Loa. It's the offering the practitioners use to make bargains or payments. Cooking and eating the animal afterward is a sacrament. Even a Bokor wouldn't waste good meat that often. But this kind of wanton death bore no relation to voodoo. It was destruction for its own sake. The destruction of souls, which carries its own price and its own charge of dark energy. Like jet fuel. This was more like the work of the Sorrows, those soul-eating carrion. The church holds it as a point of doctrine that animals don't have souls. I know better. I've seen better. It's only one place where we differ, the Holy Mother Church and I.
There are plenty of others.
The basement was clear. I headed back up the stairs. Saul met me.
No more of them. Some bodies in the bedrooms, though.
I'll check it out in a minute.
I half turned to see that Gilberto was still crouching on the porch where I'd left him. I walked over the wreck of the shattered door. He looked up at me, and before the walls behind his eyes could go up, I caught a glimpse of what he must have looked like before whatever had made him into what he was. The first time I'd met this kid, I'd known he was a killer. Strength, size, and speed are all useless without the willingness to do serious harm. Someone smaller, with the ruthlessness to hurt, can take on a giant and come away a limping winner. The dead-eyed gangbanger had that willingness in spades. We recognize each other, those of us who have come out the other side of decency and settled for survival. And sometimes, something just gets left out of people, and they don't see anything wrong with killing. That's one of the tests of taking on an apprentice. Finding out if they're willing to hurt someone if they have to, or if they're just sociopaths. You have to be sure. A hunter is a deadly thing, and that deadliness has to be disciplined. Otherwise, you're no better than the things you put down. You're worse than a traitor, even.
Gil, did you not hear me? I said go home, and leave the night alone.
What was those? Right out of a fucking horror movie, eh, bruja? And him? He's el gato. Lobo hombre, gato hombre.
You're not listening. Salt, was he already here?
Yep.
And you came out here because...
Selena called. She got no answer when she dialed Zamba. Figured you might run into some trouble. Besides, I like seeing you.
Flatterer.
Hey, whatever works. Where's Zamba?
Don't know. Any blondes in the wreckage?
Not that I saw, but the bodies are a little... Well, you'll see.
I looked back out onto the porch. Gilberto was following our exchange. He wasn't pale or in shock. He was just as he'd always been. Sallow and dirty looking. His eyes were a bit wide, but that was all.
He seems to be handling this well.
It could have been an act. Gangs are big on face, and he probably had a lot of practice in not looking scared. But usually, when someone encounters the Nightside for the first time, there's more trouble. Screaming, fainting, puking, rage. I've seen it all. The initial reaction doesn't mean much. It's how people deal with having the rationality of the world whopped away from under them over the long term that matters. After a brush with the Nightside, some retreat into rigid logic, a bulwark against something their upbringing tells them shouldn't exist. Others get increasingly loud and nervous, ending up wearing tinfoil hats and screeching about conspiracy aliens. Some of them get really, really quiet. Go home and eat a bullet or some pills. It all depends. On the other hand, in the barrio, they know about wares. Enough not to mess with them, at least. Gilberto just looked at me, his chin coming up a little. Stubbornness made him look mulish, especially when he hunched his thin shoulders and peered out under strings of hair. I knew what that look said.
What's it gonna be? What you gonna do with me? Because I ain't going home.
I stared at him, trying to make a decision. It's not like snap decisions aren't a part of the job. Some days it's nothing but. And you have to make the right one in under a hundredth of a second. But this wasn't a decision that would or could be made without a lot of thought.
Then again, the students come along whether a teacher is ready or not.
The world was just full of, on the other hand, answers today. You got a car, Gil?
Depends.
All right, here's the first thing. Don't steal any fucking cars. From now on, you don't break or even bend the law. Go back to my house. There's a key under one of the empty flower pots stacked on the east side. Go inside and don't touch anything. Unless you're getting yourself a snack. We'll talk when I get home, and I don't know when that'll be. You got me?
I got you.
I mean it. Don't steal a car. Don't break the speed limit. If you have a gun, clean or not, ditch it before you step in my door. You come in clean, or I won't have anything to do with you.
I'm not stupid.
Prove it by being clean when you step in my door. Stay inside. Don't leave until I talk to you. Go on now. Gil shrugged. His slim brown fingers loosened, and he dropped the .22. I winced internally.
He's going to be a live one.
I watched him go down the sagging steps. He headed across the street and vanished into the darkness. I scooped up his .22 and got back to the problem at hand.
What just happened?
Saul stood on the stairs, watching. Bits of zombie glop still clung to him. It was going to be a job and a half cleaning the suede up.
Thank God he believes in scotch guarding everything. Doesn't do much good with the rags my clothes end up as, but it works wonders for his.
I don't know yet.
I might have an apprentice, that's all. We'll see.
Best to keep him out of the way until I do. I checked the pistol, made sure the safety was on, and wondered if it was the one I'd seen him use before. The thought of that case was uncomfortable, to say the least. And Saul still hadn't asked any questions about it. And there was a grave up on Mount Hope, with a good cop sleeping under a green blanket. The people responsible had been mostly cleaned up, but not all of them.
Prioritize, Jill. Get back up on the horse.
When did Galena call?
Just as I got in the door. I came out here, I was wondering what the hell the kid was doing here when I heard the fight. Any idea what's going on yet?
Not much. Other than these cases are connected somehow. And if Zamba's not a body here, she might be involved.
Great. What does she look like again?
Blonde dreadlocks, tall, bad legs, but a good smile. Show me the bodies. Let's get this wrapped.
Sure thing. I'm glad I came out.
Me too, Katkin. Let's see those bodies.
Are you really? You sure?
Of course I'm glad. Jesus, Saul, what's up with you? And can it wait? I've got a city about to blow sky high here and a pattern I don't like the looks of underneath.
Nothing. Follow me. Let's check out upstairs. There are bodies in the bedrooms. Nothing in the kitchen, but a pot on the stove. Smells like the other place, a little.
But no blondes? Blonde dreadlocks. Waist length? Wide face, big nose, bad skin, rotting teeth rimmed with gold, making a bright starred smile.
Come and see.
It was 9 bodies, all told. I recognized an ebony-skinned trio, male and female, who had been Zamba's longtime acolytes. There was a small, compact Hispanic male. Zamba was truly Catholic in her choice of trainees. And a taller Grecian redhead. A double Gemini of husky, dark-haired males completed the sets. There were 3 to a room, her inner circle all naked and twisted together like the goats in the basement. The beds had been scattered with chrysanthemum petals, and their throats had been ripped out. They probably wouldn't rise as zombies, but I'd nail the palms and feet before forensics got there. There wasn't enough etheric residue in them to power that kind of motion anyway. Zamba's devotees had been eaten, and either someone had brushed aside Zamba's protections and killed her followers and her, or what? In the kitchen, a pot on the stove was long cool. A stringy brew of something that smelled vaguely similar to Lorelei's still bubbling concoction rested under a thick scrim of clotted grease. The kitchen was otherwise spick and span. An attached dining room where Zamba fed her acolytes held a long table and an altar on the wall under the window that looked out on the side yard and the wall of the abandoned house next door. Saul stood by the sink, arms folded, looking at the bottle of dishwashing liquid and scrubbies neatly placed in a chrome rack.
What do you make of this?
I don't like that we can't find her body. And that's just one of the things I don't like about this.
Any chance she could be the one behind all this?
More than a chance, Katkin. Still, I suppose there's always room to hope she's not. I'd like it better if the bitch was dead.
Now there's something I don't hear you say often. It's almost dawn.
No shit. This has been a long night. If Zamba's behind this, it's bad news. If she's just disappeared, it's bad news too. It means we might have another body site.
What's our next step?
Calling someone to come out and take care of this site. Seeing if I overlooked Zamba's body in the basement or in the backyard. Going over this place with a fine-tooth comb, then going through the files. Ugh, this has all the earmarks of a serious fucking tangle. As usual.
If Zamba is behind this, what does she have against the Cirque?
I don't... Huh. I straightened suddenly and stared at the pot on the stove. Saul didn't press me. He stood looking at the sink and let me wander around inside my head. It was good to have him there. He served up the right questions and knew when to keep his mouth shut so I could think. I found myself studying the lines of his fringed jacket, his jeans splattered with zombie, the edge of the stove, his boots, my own boot toes. Eyes roving, snagging on the linoleum as I pursued the line of thought to its logical end, found it wanting, but not wanting enough. If a better theory comes along, I'll snag it. There's a landline in the living room. Call this scene in. I'm gonna check the backyard and the houses on either side.
I'm coming with you.
Of course you are. After you call. Piper was still processing the last scene, so this time Foster showed up. His own brown ponytail, slick as ever. He surveyed the stinking goop starred with porous bones that had been zombies and shook his head.
Busy night. Anything else?
The bedrooms. Don't take the iron nails out of the corpses. And there's animals downstairs.
Well, shit. All right. Let's get this show on the road, folks.
Foster motioned his team past, Carolyn holding the log in front of her like a holy grail. Max with his camera. Stephanie and Browder with their matching smiles and bags of gear.
Buku overtime for these guys.
Sullivan and the Badger also showed up. The badger's mouth was set tight and turned down, her gray hair pulled back into its usual bun, the white streak down one side glinting since I'd flicked the porch lights on. Sullivan, scratching at his coppery stubble, gave me a weak grin. He looks like a dishwasher, even on a good day, but that pale, nervous exterior hides a sharp, inductive mind, and for someone who looks so washed out, he certainly has a big, strident voice. The badger looks like a cookie-baking, kitten sweatshirt and mom jean-wearing soccer mom, a particularly cuddly and harmless one. She'd added a pair of steel-framed glasses to her round, florid face and moved carefully. I wasn't fooled. For such a rotund woman, she was light on her feet when it counted. And they don't call her the badger for her hair. She gets that name by being tenacious as hell. She does it in such a nice, unassuming way that people forget her namesake has teeth and claws. Rumor has it, she went a couple of rounds with a sex offender once and busted him up bad by the time backup arrived. The perp thought one plump lady cop would be easy to bowl over. He spent 3 weeks in the hospital and another couple months in physical therapy, I was told. I'd lay odds it's true. Sullivan patted his breast pocket, where a pack of Marlboro Lights peeped up at me.
How many fucking scenes you gonna give us tonight?
As many as I've got, Sullivan. Hi, Badge.
Thought you didn't want a team tonight.
With bodies mounting up like this, I need backup. And I'm glad it's you two.
Huh. Should we check the other scenes?
Might as well. This turned out bigger than I thought it'd be. I thought I could save you guys some work.
You kidding? If we wanted less work, we wouldn't have chosen this job.
Make sure the techs don't take the nails out of the hands and feet. See if you can get any IDs on the messy bodies. The less messy ones will be easier, but I already know who they are. Find out where they were last seen. See if you can trace the animals.
Animals? Shit.
Sorry. Oh, and see if you can dig up who this house actually belongs to. I'd like a legal name, DOB, everything. I don't know nearly enough about Zomba. That's going to change.
That means you have a hunch. Don't worry, I won't ask. I know I don't want to know. I'll page you as soon as we have something.
Good deal. Thanks.
Huh. Go figure.
What? I followed Sullivan's gaze down at the garden. The belt of jungle greenery brought to mind the uncomfortable recollection of Lorelei's backyard.
Plants are dying. Looks like someone did a hell of a lot of work on the yard, though. You'd think a place like this, they wouldn't have stopped watering before they died. Or are the bodies old?
Not too old. Especially the ones that were trying to kill me about a half hour ago.
Whatever. Just a thought. See you, Jill. Try not to trip over any more deadens tonight.
Shut up, Sully. It's our job.
The badger herded Sullivan into the house. What a pair. Saul drifted beside me as I made my way down the cracked, zigzagging walk.
Car's this way.
I nodded. Let him take the lead. Sullivan's right. The garden is just in the first stages of dying. Plants are drooping, but not browned and crispy yet. I stopped, turned, and looked back at the house, its windows blazing with golden light now. A hose was coiled up next to the porch's listing sneer. Hellebore, feverfew, foxglove, wormwood, mugwort, bindweed, American ginseng under a rigged-up canvas canopy, some succulents, but not many, and the rest of the plants were useful, in one way or another, to a rogue herbalist or kitchen witch,
or a voodoo queen.
The zombies were relatively fresh. So were the bodies. Rigor mortis doesn't last that long. Bellies were distended on the goats downstairs, but that happens. I'd need an autopsy to be reasonably sure of time of death. But the garden, though. Things wilt fast out here in the desert. But if things were normal out here at Mama Zamba's, if normal could be the word applied to the biggest wheel in the voodoo community in my town, the garden should be in tip-top shape for a little while after she was dead. So what had kept her so busy her garden didn't get watered? She had people to do it for her. The zombies were too juicy, and the human bodies were too fresh. Just didn't add up. Unless the reigning queen of the voodoo scene had had something more than gardens on her mind lately. And on the minds of her followers.
What are you thinking?
I don't quite know yet. It's more and more likely Zamba's involved instead of a victim. I think we should get some breakfast since dawn's coming up.
And then?
And then we're going to visit Galena again. If she hasn't gone through her diaries yet, I'll wait while she does. I've got a theory, but I can't figure one thing out.
That one thing would be...
Why a voodoo queen has it in for the Cirque? You'd think if she hated Hellbreed, she'd find some closer to home to murder. Mickey's on Mayfair was just the same as it always is around dawn, almost deserted, clean as a whistle, and staffed with wares. Some of the waitstaff are humans, true, but the greater percentage, including the owner, are from the Santa Luz Prides, Packs, and Flights. Amelia, a lioness of the Norte Luz Pride, greeted us at the door.
Jill, nice to see you. Dust Circle, a table, or is it business?
A table.
I must have looked grim, and I realized I was dirty and disheveled. They do usually see me in this state, but I'd been thinking so hard, even my nose had shut off. I cast around vainly for something to wipe off with. Does Theron have any towels lying around?
I'll check.
Amelia grinned, her broad, high-cheekboned face lighting up. I suddenly felt even more dirty and mucky, snuck a peek at Saul. He was just the same as ever. His essential difference shining out from under weariness and zombie muck, and I felt myself deflate like a punctured balloon. It wasn't fair.
They're so much better than we can ever be, the wares.
No wonder humans hunted them during the bad old days of the Inquisition. The only thing humans hate more than ugliness is actual beauty. Theron, a lean, dark werepanther, actually came out from the bar to greet us, wiping his hands on a white cloth that had seen much, much better days in the bleach bucket. His long fingers danced with it, refolding it so the holes didn't show.
Hey, Saul. Glad to see you back.
Theron? How's bartending?
Good work if you can get it. Hi, Jill.
Hey! Oh, sorry. I smell. Got a spare towel?
You bet.
Jill's hungry.
Saul folded his arms and stared at Theron. It was so unlike him, my jaw threatened to drop. But Theron just shrugged. Amelia tipped me a wink and a salute, and both of them disappeared, leaving us to seat ourselves.
What was that? Saul?
Saul gave me a single dark glance, hitched one shoulder up and dropped it. I considered folding my arms, but Saul set off for our regular booth along the back wall. Theron showed up again, carrying a stack of damp washcloths.
Here you go. You guys want a beer?
Might as well. I wiggled my eyebrows and pointed my chin at Saul's retreating back.
What's up with him? Help me out here.
Theron just looked confused, a blush sliding across his high-arched cheekbones. His dark hair fell across his forehead, curls and waves damp with sweat. It looked like Mickey's had seen a heavy night. He was just cleaning up before dawn. The liquor laws in Santa Luz kind of don't apply to the non-humans. Hellbreed and trader bars go the same way, only they rollick far harder than any place the wares run. In both senses of the word. Harder, dirtier, and far, far fouler.
What's wrong?
I wished my eyebrows would go up higher, and that my face could communicate the complexity of the question I wanted to ask. Theron spread his hands helplessly, spun on the balls of his feet, and set off for the hall running alongside the kitchen. It actually looked like he was retreating.
What the hell is going on here?
The washcloths. They were bar towels, soaked and smelling of bleach and fresh laundry. Dripped in my hands, rapidly cooling. Nobody was likely to give an answer. A short time later, Saul slid the file across the table at me and tucked into his fried eggs and ham. I took a long pull off a bottle of microbrew Theron had slung on the table, and eyed the steak and eggs combo, hash browns cremated the way I liked them, extra bacon, and toast slathered with butter. It probably had enough calories in it to keep me fueled through a long night of chasing evil.
I wonder if it'll fuel my brain enough for me to figure out the pattern behind the murders.
Once I started eating, I realized how hungry I was. This led to a good quarter hour spent in silence. I finished my beer, and another arrived.
So did more toast. Amelia simply plunked down a fresh plate of it and raised an eyebrow. About the closest she'd get to telling me I'd better eat it all.
Wares. It's only one of the ways they show they care.
Fighting off the undead and hell's citizens all night does work up a girl's appetite. Sorcery can only do so much, and I wasn't as young as I used to be. I used to be able to go for days without eating, running from one thing to the next, writing checks my body cashed without complaining too much. But not anymore. I finally looked up from my plate to find Saul chewing slowly, watching me. His eyes were dark and fathomless. I was glad Mickey's was empty.
Hi. Good to see you.
Hi, kitten. Nice to see you, too.
Is it? Or are you just saying that? This is looking like a huge problem.
Isn't it always? You think it's connected?
Well, there are those bugs. Each one with a red spot. The green smoke. Voodoo practitioners dead, zombies everywhere. Possessed people that shouldn't be, one of them ending up as a zombie. And Zamba missing. Cirque's hostage attacked. And another Cirque performer dead. Both Zamba and Lorelei had something cooking on their stoves.
If it looks like a duck, swims like a duck, quacks like a duck.
It's certainly not a zebra. So, they're more than likely connected, all these things. I just don't know how yet. What possible connection could the Cirque have with any voodoo practitioner?
I don't know.
Voodoo and Hellbreed don't tangle. It's just one of those things.
They must mix sometimes.
The Loa are jealous, and Hellspawn don't like anything interfering with their games either. And then there's this.
I yanked the plastic-shrouded straight razor out of my pocket. Next was the enamel cup. Put together, they looked shoddy. The straight razor crouched in its swaddling, and the cup's chipped sides reflected fluorescent light.
A razor? And a cup?
Yeah. My instincts are all tingling, but I don't know what they're saying.
Tingling instincts? I hear they have creams for that.
They're not burning, just tingling. Anyway, and then there's zombies. It takes work and effort to create one with voodoo. Now all of a sudden they're crawling around everywhere. And the twins are taking an active interest in everything. Oh.
What? You look like you just thought of something.
I did.
Well?
Nothing solid yet, Catkin. Let me think.
I scanned the file, flipping past Xeroxed pages and paperwork filled in with Avery's neat scrawl.
Lucky boy, our first victim, Mr. Ricardo. A green card and everything.
Avery, bless his little heart, had even pulled the application for me. I'd bet anything Juan Ruijo, our local FBI contact, had facilitated that little search as a favor. Dear old Juan, a joy to work with. Not like the last feeb we had.
That's interesting.
Ricardo even had a sponsor. The little click of a puzzle piece sliding home sounded in the middle of my head.
Hey, Saul. Guess what? Ricardo had a green card.
Oh, yeah?
Guess who his sponsor was?
Who?
Lorelei.
Now, that's interesting.
As soon as we finish here, we're heading for Galena's. I'll bet your ham and my entire plate she knows something about this. She's had a chance to go through her diaries by now.
Dawn came up in gray streaks, followed by rose and gold. Once the sun heaved itself up over the rim of the world, I let out a half-conscious sigh of relief. My pager stayed quiet. And, true to my guess, Galena had spent all night with not only her own diaries, but the records of the sanctuary before her. Huge leather-bound books, each cover stamped with the seal of the order, stood in stacks on her butcher block table. She was covered in dust, her hair held back with a red kerchief, and as ill-tempered as I'd ever seen her, which was still pretty damn polite. I folded my arms and leaned against the wall. Saul was standing over Galena's stove.
Rosehip tea?
Oh, yes. Yes, indeed.
Jill?
I'm fine. Galena, tell me about the problem Sloane had with the Cirque.
I've been going back through the records. I was wrong. It wasn't Arthur Gregory. The trouble started with Sam.
Sam?
Samuel Gregory, Arthur's younger brother. Arthur came to Sloane needing help. His brother had disappeared. The Cirque was in town, and Sloane suspected them, but he couldn't find the boy. Arthur kept following Sloane around, pestering him. He didn't get what he wanted, so he went elsewhere.
Elsewhere? That could mean just about anything.
He apparently decided that since Sloane couldn't help him, he'd make a deal with someone who would.
Not too bright of him. But sometimes civilians make that sort of mistake.
Hellbreed?
Voodoo, or so I heard. Sloane suspected Lorelei. She wasn't Lorelei then. She was Abigail Figueroa. It was in the 70s that she switched over to—
Hold on. This may be connected. But how? I dropped down into a chair, my brain buzzing.
Thank you, Saul.
Saul pulled out a wooden chair and sat, setting his own mug on the table. This Arthur, he had a hard-on for the Cirque?
I don't know. I do know Sloane suspected that was where Samuel disappeared to, and dug pretty hard to find him. Arthur disappeared, and Sloane went looking for him, too. He came across some of the Cirque folk running a game on the side. Something to do with child slaves, I think, though he never said. And he put them out of commission. He tried to find either of the Gregory boys, but neither of them ever showed up. He was still working the case, on and off, when the outbreak happened.
Yeah, that would put a dent in working a case or two. So it never got wrapped up, and it's only vanishingly likely it's connected to what we have going on now. Was there any proof at all that this Arthur kid went to Voodoo? Or did Sloane just suspect?
The last place Arthur was seen was going into Lorelei's old shop. She used to be down near Plesanky Square, instead of on Greenlee. I can't believe I'd forgotten that. Anyway, Sloane had a witness who placed him there before he disappeared. There was something else. People who knew the boys turned up dead.
Like who?
Their father, for one. A real winner, the kind who likes to use the strap. He ended up torn in pieces and scattered around his rooming house cot, blood all over the walls. And there was another man. He'd apparently been their mother's other pimp. It was a different world then, Jill.
Not so different. So the father was a husband, and she had another pimp?
Bounced back and forth between them. Poor kids. There were others. A few police detectives. One's on the take, Sloane said. And a school kid who hung out with the Gregory boys was apparently a bit of a bully.
That's a high body count. They can't have been unrelated.
Life was cheap back then, Jill. This was a mining town and a river port. I remember when you didn't dare go outside at night if you were a respectable female. At least not without a man and a gun. Anyway, the deaths were all the same. Torn into tiny pieces, lots of blood.
Life is still cheap around here, Galena. At least if you're brown-skinned or poor. Huh. I wonder. I should still have some of Sloane's records. Can you write down the dates for me?
I can do that.
So is someone settling scores?
Possible. But why try to kill the hostage? That won't damage the Cirque. It will remove the constraints that make them behave. And Helene... It was a long time ago. Long and long.
Do we have any pictures of either of the Gregories?
No, unfortunately. This is so frustrating. I feel like there's something I should be remembering.
Well, it was almost a century ago, Galena. It's not like forgetting what you had for lunch yesterday.
It kind of is, though. This is important. It's just on the tip of my brain. Ugh. But I should have noted it. And I've been all through my official diary and the private one. It feels... unfinished.
Life is full of unfinished things.
So, Jill, what do you think?
What I think is, this is all very historical and interesting, but it sounds like a dead end. And there's nothing to tie an old case to what's going on now. Unless it's Lorelei. And she had her fingers in so many nasty pies. It's not very likely she was just now killed for something that happened almost 100 years ago. The connection's probably elsewhere. The attack on the hostage was Voodoo. Perry's supposed to stay and make sure the hostage doesn't bite it. In any case, it'll be nightfall before someone can try again. At least I've got one problem that doesn't have to be solved immediately. I've got Voodoo practitioners dropping like flies, spirits in people who shouldn't have them, though if they're believers, it changes the equation a little, and one of them came down with a bad case of zombie. Zomba's missing in action. She could quite possibly be needing protection. Or she's part of this. Either of which is equally unprepossessing. I've got forensics collecting evidence and Sullivan and Badger doing some digging.
So what's up next?
Going home and getting cleaned up. Figuring out what to do with that kid. Then the next step.
Which is? And what kid?
The kid who's been following me around. And the next step is visiting some botanicas. Zamba wasn't the only game in town, just the biggest one.
Is the kid an apprentice? When did this happen?
It hasn't happened yet. Right now, I want to just keep him out of trouble.
That's funny. That's just what Sloane said about Arthur Gregory. I remember that much, at least.
For once, I observed the speed limit. Saul lit a charvel and stared aimlessly out the window. Santa Luz sometimes looks washed out, the sun bleaching buildings and dirt, the dust haze putting everything in soft focus. The greens are pale sage, the whites turn taupe and buff, and any dab of brightness gets covered with a thin film before long. It's different in the barrio. Bright blocks of primary color are a little more cheerful in the daylight, but a little more carnivorous at night. Even well-tended lawns look anemic under the first assault of morning light. It isn't until the richness of twilight that things take on that mellow gold tinge, like waking up from a siesta with the world scrubbed clean and a little brighter. It could just be me, but things seem tired in the morning. The day has risen wearily from the bowl of night. It's when I get to go home, because the nasty things mostly stick to darkness to do their dirtiness. They don't call it the night side for nothing. This morning seemed a little darker than usual. Early coolness rose from the river, but it somehow seemed to promise a scorcher later. The scar had been uncovered almost all night, and the sensory acuity was beginning to seem normal. The shadows were wrong this morning, just by a millimeter or two. They were at strange angles, and darker than the usual knife-sharp morning shadows. Gleams flickered through them, pairs of colorless gleams, low and slinking. Are those circ dogs? It wasn't precisely against the rules for the circ's dogs to be out running, but it was strange. Stranger than someone with a grudge against both voodoo practitioners and Hellbreed? Stranger than Zamba disappearing and her entire household laid waste? Stranger than Perry doing exactly what I tell him to? The more I thought about it, the more my brain just went in circles. Even intuition wasn't any help. It just flailed and threw up its hands. I was too tired and getting dull-witted. Fatigue is a risk during cases like this. Oh, God damn it.
Jill!
Huh?
We need to talk.
Oh, Christ, not now. What's up? I break to a stop on Chesco. We turn and go up Luvia Avenue. I stared at the red light, waiting for it to change and for Saul to talk. I noticed the shadows outside the car, roiling in the corners of buildings. The light turned green. I touched the accelerator. No, it isn't my imagination. The colorless eyes in those shadows are following us. What is it, Saul?
I love you.
He tossed the half-smoked charvel away. It somersaulted in the slipstream and was gone. I checked the rear view. Just wonderful. Jesus.
You know that, right?
I do. That's not the problem. The problem is that you can't stand to touch me now. And an even bigger problem is those eyes I sense in the shadows. The ones watching us right now.
Are you listening to me?
Of course I am. You said you love me. I said I know. You asked...
There's something...
Saul twitched, then looked out the window.
Jill, is something following us?
Hang on. Half a second.
God damn it. There's never a minute alone with you.
You're alone with me right now. Outside the car, the shadows were growing blacker, their crystalline eyes reflecting a daylight stripped of all its warmth. We roared down Luvia, the shadows keeping pace. They circled as we bounced over the railroad tracks and down a long, sun-drenched stretch of road. Here, the sun hit a wall of warehouses dead on to my left. And there wasn't a shadow to be found, except the shadow of the Pontiac running next to us with its own loping stride. I took a jagged right on Cervedo Street, working the turn like threading a needle in one motion. My warehouse was about 6 blocks down. And even from here, my smart eye could see the layers of protection on my walls waking in bursts of blue etheric flame.
Oh, holy shit! There's a civilian in there! I sent him in myself!
I jammed the accelerator to the floor and prayed I wasn't too late. I bailed out of the car in a blur, Saul right behind me. The good news was that I wouldn't have to break my own door down. The bad news was that there was a gaping hole where the front door used to be. Green smoke billowed out, thinning in the morning breeze. And there wasn't a shadow to be found.
Shit!
The fume was acrid, tasting of rotten pumpkins and stale cigar smoke as we moved down the short hall. I burst into the living room, couch overturned, floors awash with greasy, knee-deep smoke. I headed for the long, wood-floored sparring room. The mirrors along one wall were all cracked, the ballet bar splintered, the weapons hanging on the walls scattered except for one long quivering shape under a fall of amber silk. Gilberto Rosario Gonzalez Ayala was in a crouch, a bowie knife flat against one forearm. Fainting, he jabbed the blade at a shape made of smoke and nightmare. He was bleeding. A scalp wound, I thought, since his face was covered with blood. His left arm hung, flopping queerly at his side, but his face was alive. His eyes damn near shone. I'd never seen Gilberto light up before. And now wasn't the time to pay attention. Still, the computer in my head took note. Saul shifted behind me as I hurled myself forward, hitting the shape of green smoke with both physical and etheric force. The smoke solidified into breaking pistol shards under the shock of my blow, raining for the floor.
Oh shit! More zombies!
I hit the ground and whirled. Saul was dodging the shambling fingers of a zombie. Four more crowded behind it. His claws sheared the face off the one he was dancing with. My fingers unlimbered the whip.
Six! Six! Six!
What the hell is Gil talking about?
I suddenly realized he was telling me how many enemies we had loose inside the warehouse. Or at least how many he'd seen.
Well, he's got his wits about him. How long has he been in here with them? God damn it! I was looking forward to getting clean, too. This is easy. These bastards are old and fragile.
They were all porous bones and worm-eaten flesh. I turned, ready to dash into the warehouse in pursuit of the sixth zombie when it blundered around the corner, arms outstretched like a bad B-movie villain. I leapt forward, my fist cocked back. The punch went through his head.
It never ceases to amaze me how satisfying making a zombie's head explode can be.
But of course, I didn't have much time to relish the experience.
Who the hell would send zombies into my fucking house?
Dios mío!
What the hell, Gilberto?
The doorbell rang.
Your arm.
The kid winced as Saul touched his left arm, but he didn't let go of the knife. I recognized it. An antique bowie, with a plain hilt and a blessing running under the metal surface. It had belonged to the first Jack Karma, one of the hunters in my lineage.
His arm's broken.
Get it set. I'm gonna sweep the house.
Will do. Gil? This is gonna hurt a bit.
Chingada, man. Just get it over with. Oh, yeah. There was a blonde bitch at the door, but I think she left.
Blonde?
Dreadlocks, bruja. Right down to her ass. Tall, too. Dressed like mi abuela, for fuck's sake. Flower, muumuu, and everything.
I wonder if he's talking about a blue caftan embroidered with orchids.
I swept the rest of the warehouse. Someone definitely had an agenda. They had gone straight to my bedroom, where the bed stood away from all four walls, and three filing cabinets against one wall were busted open and ransacked. Paper scattered the floor. There was nothing in the cabinets except bills and invoices for things like custom leatherwork, ammunition, artifacts bought, necessary for tax purposes. Even a hunter has to file. I generally end up getting a refund, though. It's the least Uncle Sam can do for me.
All the really revealing personal papers, like Mikhail's birth certificate and mine, files on cases closed or unclosed, immunization records, school records, anything that might give an enemy a foothold or a piece of insight, were locked up in a concrete vault under Hutch's bookstore. After Mikhail's death and Melisande Belisa's rifling of his personal papers, it seemed like a good idea. And I was never so glad as right now. Sloane's papers were there too, whatever survived the fire in 38, that is. The warehouse was fracked up but clean of zombies, and the shadows were only shadows. Someone had quickly but thoroughly torn through the filing cabinets. In the kitchen, someone had opened all the cabinets and torn open the filing cabinet at the end of the breakfast bar. Police and federal contacts, files on protocols for requesting funding from different municipal, county, and state, not to mention federal contacts, all pulled out and scattered. That was potentially more damaging. I searched quickly through the papers, checked the drawers. Each file was labeled in either my spidery handwriting or Saul's firmer copper plate script. Nothing immediately appeared to be missing. A few files had been yanked out and scattered. Saul appeared at the doorway to the living room. How's Gil's arm?
I'm gonna cast it. Need anything?
You're gonna help me find something out.
What's that?
What Mama Zamba was looking for in my fucking filing cabinets. And why she's alive if most of her inner circle is dead. And what the fuck is really going on here?
You're sure it was Zamba?
Tall, long blonde dreadlocks, a bunch of zombies and green smoke? Sounds like Zamba to me. The only things missing are the cockroaches.
You know, that doesn't comfort me as much as it should. You okay?
Frustrated as hell, but okay.
All right. I'm gonna get the kid put back together.
Get him something to eat, too. Oh, he's thin as a rail.
He fought off 6 zombies.
Or he was smart enough to stay away from them. 6 of one, half a dozen of the other. Get him fixed up.
And then?
And then we're gonna get cleaned up, board up the front door, and get going. We're dropping the kid off at Galena's, where I know he'll be safe. After that, we're paying a visit to Hutch's.
I thought Hutch was out of town.
He is, vacationing in the Galapagos. But Zamba was after something. It's a safe bet that whatever it is in the vault. Go on, time's a-wasting. I had to admit, Gilberto had some potential. He was also goddamn lucky Zamba hadn't unseamed him from guts to garters. She must have been in an awful hurry. The pager's number was unfamiliar.
My dearest Kiss, I presume you're well?
Why is the Cirque sending its dogs after me, Pericles?
That isn't the Cirque, my dearest. It was me, and they are to watch over you. Another performer is dead. Your presence is requested.
Who's dead? Traitor or Hellbreed? And when?
Before dawn, one of my kind, a fortune teller, I believe you would call it, Morag.
And the hostage?
Safe and snug and under my especial protection and supervision. Fear not for him, my dear. Come see the latest death and destruction. It has a certain symmetry.
I'll be there when I get there. Oh. And Perry?
Yes?
Go fuck yourself. Take care of that hostage.
I told you he's safe. Why do you make me repeat myself?
Oh, I just like to make sure you understand.